John Hoag is with us. His website, HoagProphecy.com, is linked up at CoastToCoastAM.com. We're going to take some of your calls when we come back in a moment with John as well. Now, we're not doing readings, so we're not doing personal readings on the show tonight, but we're talking about Nostradamus and prophecy, so you can dive in with that. But we'll be back with John Hoag and more in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, John Hoag with us. John, did Nostradamus ever have prophecies that were good or happy?
not a lot. You've got to have a great sense of humor to deal with Nostradamus, because his whole thing was to kind of scare people straight. But let's see. I'm trying to think of one.
I mean, they were all doom and gloom, weren't they?
Well, not, you know, one of they're not actually. It's one of the things I'm doing in the, I'm already a year into it, and I've got another 2 years. It's like it's sandwiched into everything else I'm doing. Is I'm going to be putting out the ultimate Nostradamus interpretation of the last 4.6 centuries, and it's basically probably three volumes of 750 pages apiece.
Oh my God!
I just can really embrace all the stuff. It's actually a lot, of course, it's the foibles of human history for 4.6 centuries and all the way up to 3797 AD, which is the last dated prophecy, but it goes beyond that even. And so there's a lot of horror, but there's also a lot of wonder. There's things about space travel. There's things about inventions that we'd make. There's some there's just all treasures that are found, and I mean, there's about 2,200 prophecies if you could comprise them. There's about 1,500 that are verses, 1,400 to 1,500 if you count the verse prophecies that are not in the main opus. But with all his prose prophecies from 1550 to 1567. Which was his almanacs, which he did every year since 1550. He did the prophecies of Nostradamus serialized between 1555 and 1561. And then they all got put together in an edition a few years after he died. He was working on it with the publishers, and so it was posthumously published. And that's the thing that we use ever since. That's the volume or basis of them all comprised into one. For such a big author of prophecies, these books were little pocketbooks. You get the term pocketbook, but you could literally tuck it in your sleeve of your big, broad Renaissance shirt, you know? So it's amazing. So much talk about a book that actually was very small.
Now, you have talked about what you call the apocalyptic sequences in some of Nostradamus' prophecies. What does that mean?
Well, there are at least 12 prophecies that follow a certain pattern. Given that Nostradamus, I contend after over 40 years of doing this, is that all of my poor colleague friends who tried to find order in Nostradamus's chaos they all got trapped doing it into trying to make it all kind of work, like all the quatrain dates are in all the quatrain indexes. Well, they're not. Nostradamus is a chaos. And in chaos, since chaos seems to be the womb of order, there are some patterns of order that show up. And one of them is a sequence where it's plague, famine, war, and then renewal. In different versions of that, the words change, but it's always the same theme. He might say hunger rather than famine, or he might say pestilence rather, or disease rather than plague,
But he means the same thing, though, doesn't he?
Yeah, it seems to be about our times in the near future, and it falls down a similar pattern that I was talking about the unraveling, the defait of the world structures and things, and that certainly seems to be happening all the way to the sixth mass extinction that we're undergoing. And, you know, with the climate being changed and political and economic systems not working, the fact that America seems to be undergoing an end of its empire period, of its life cycle in the next 4 years, fiat economy. So, you know, you name it, something is being upended. And, you know, that's why I always return back to the theme that is underlying everything that I've done doing this for 40 years, and that's to give people a journey into the future to find themselves in the time they really live in, the present. And it's in the present, if one can relax with attention and awareness into the present, you would be amazed how many of the existence's secrets are effortlessly there to guide us. And so what is needed, the remedy to Nostradamus scaring us straight, is for people to come back to the center, to not live identified with the past, and not take that identification and fears and hopes of the past and project it on the pure potentiality of the future. The only place to really embrace the future is with every dying moment, a new moment is born, eternally new and the same and abiding, and that's pure potential. The future is about the future gives a spontaneous response in the moment to whatever is needed to be done. So that is why, you know, I try in my books to call people to the meditation techniques that I have learned to come back to the present, and the readings that I do now since 2018, returning to readings so that people can have sessions with me one-on-one for about 90 minutes or longer, and we can look at that on Zoom. So
super.
You That'll can find work. That on HogueProphecy.com right at the beginning. You'll see Hogue Readings. And the other thing, too, I want to say quickly is that the book is going to be out in May Day, and there's also something I've got up on my website where you can get...
Is it a physical book, by the way, or an e-book?
Well, right now it's an e-book, but it's a PDF e-book that's going to have illustrations in it, color, full color.
Okay.
And so you can just see that at Hogue Prophecy. You'll see the cover of the book there, at just a few paragraphs down from the top.
If you were around during Nostradamus' days, John, and heck, sometimes you look with him, you look like him when you have your beret on and things like that. And as a matter of fact,
it's pretty creepy. I don't understand why he wants to try so hard to look like me.
I love it. And by the way, God willing, I'm going to see you in September back in Everett, Washington, with our renewed live stage show. So we're keeping our fingers crossed on that one.
I predict it'll happen. I've been telling people disbelievingly in their responses to me for the last few months that America is going to break out of this with the vaccines a lot faster than people think. And, you know, I'm sure that by September we will be doing it.
Care to take a guess on whether you believe this is what I have said? I said this from the get-go back in December of 2019 when I saw this bizarre little story that said that a person in Wuhan, China had gotten sick eating a tainted bat that got this disease. And I saw that and said, this story is so weird, I've got to use it. And I did. And then it started to fester really fast and turn into what it is today. Do you think it was, one, made in that lab in Wuhan, as I do, and two, was it released accidentally or on purpose?
I think when people live in a state of somnambulist unconsciousness, dreaming they're awake, it's almost like I could say it was accidentally on purpose, whether that people were making things, I lean towards, from my own research, that it was some botched chemistry lab issue that got out. And because of the weird, the designer qualities of this, and I go into this, I was doing that in March and April. I was writing about it when it was not really known. And it's a lot of the stuff that I was leaning towards seems to be more towards that it was manufactured but it got out. And whether it was the Americans who worked there too or the Chinese, that is not certain.
No, that's true, because we did give that lab money, didn't we?
Well, not only that, we've had, and I talk about it in the book, we've had scientists there since 2014. So even Mr. Fauci was there, you know, it was even some of his own.
I think Fauci knows a little bit more than he's telling us.
Yeah. The Pope of Plagues. Yes. I would just say for the record that watching Dr. Fauci, I would advise him, don't be in the forecasting business, because he is he's batting almost minus 100.
Yep. Absolutely.
I'm always embarrassed when he starts making forecasts, because it's like they don't work.
We talked to Dean Kuntz when that story broke about him mentioning Wuhan 400 in his book Eyes of Darkness, and he didn't want to talk about it. He just said, I, you know, wasn't making any forecasts or anything like that. I just did it. But it's so uncanny. I mean, it's crazy.
You know, I get a sense for just feeling it out that his reaction is a reaction that I think anybody who's trying to be authentic and honest with this stuff is a reaction I often have when I get something right that's really off the wall. It's not like, oh, look at me, I'm a real smart.
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
You're kind of in shock that you come up with it, I guess.
Yeah, and it's kind of an occupational hazard when you just feel something like that come up. I will say one thing, though, that the little bit of good news I can say is that I'm thinking it took a long time for the mainstream news to catch up on what's going on in Ukraine. How it's literally approaching a Cuban Missile Crisis potential of several that are.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Putin's making threats.
I'm hearing and sensing from my own premonition meter, which I wrote a whole book about. That's our warning bell thing here about the new Cold War. We are definitely in it, and the problem is that it's not. It's actually moving towards intense negotiation, and I wouldn't be surprised unless the right-wing neo-Nazis in the Ukrainian government push Zelensky, the president, to do something outrageous. But it's long story short, I think we're going to see a drawback in about 2 weeks.
And what about China and Taiwan? That's my concern.
That's the one that's kind of still hanging there.
Yeah, we have a treaty with Taiwan. We're supposed to defend them. I'm not sure we're going to go to war over that.
Well, here's the thing, and I, in my most recent bunch of articles I put out at Hoax Prophecy, the opening is a freebie. Everybody can read it, looking at this whole situation with Ukraine and Taiwan becoming almost like a Cuban Missile Crisis repeat. Which gets into some weird stuff when you consider that, since we did that, these warning series kind of shows starting in April of 2014, mm-hmm. when the first Ukrainian eruptions started happening, Crimea left, and it was like, okay, it looks like we're in the second Cold War. That's in Nostradamus' prophecies about the two Eagle Kings of the North. We're trying to be brothers, but they can't be brothers.
Exactly.
And when you look at the totems of America and Russia, they both have eagles in their presidential seals. So it seems to be about that, the high north, and we both have territory above the Arctic Circle, Alaska, Siberia, these old periods of time. Nostradamus is remarkable in counting periods of time, but he will never give you the starting date because he doesn't want to give it to the evil people that might want to make that happen or not make that happen. So we have to find the time. I think with this this Ukrainian
it's
situation,
close.
Yeah, I've been up since 6 a.m. this Cuban situation, I did it again. The Ukrainian situation is the beginning of what I think is the countdown of his two timelines for a Cold War potentially becoming hot.
Yeah.
And that's 3 years and 7 months and 13 years. Now, if we consider March as the count, because really it was the buildup, the Ukrainians began the buildup. It's amazing how the Western media has kind of missed that point, that the Russians are building up to actually stop the Ukrainians from thinking they can get anything out of going to war and rather go to peace. If they're not reporting how much Lavrov, the foreign minister, and Putin and others are trying to negotiate this thing out. But, you know, as the bias, you know, the... Sorry to say it, but if this was the 1930s, the Russians are the new Jews of Germany. You know, whatever we do wrong with our own lives, we blame it on the Russians. Just like Hitler's
people. And we saw how that ended up.
Yeah, and when we're in a kind of the approach of a potential of World War III that we've never seen yet since the last World War. So it's...
That's when I think China makes its move. At the same time.
Yeah, I mean, China is a part of it, and but it's the Thucydides trap, as been stated. When a hegemon is in its decline, and there's a rising hegemon to compete with it, I mean, Britain with the German Empire in 1914, the Athenian state being threatened by the rise of Sparta. In the Peloponnesian Wars, where this term was coined, you end up eventually having a clash, military first, economic, and then clash. In fact, I use the 1914 analogy a lot in my writings because England and Britain and Germany had a lot of economic interactions, just like we in China do. But they still went off into war in World War One.
I've always said, John, who benefits when something happens? And the thing we haven't brought up yet was when the Wuhan virus came out, it came out during the time of those protests in Hong Kong, which were unprecedented in China. I mean, almost as bad as Tiananmen Square. And all of a sudden, when the Wuhan virus hit Wuhan, the Hong Kong thing went away. It was over with.
Well, yeah, it was shut down. Everybody was sequestered. It's just like a lot of... You know, they sequestered everybody, it had, I think when I was watching, I would just say it had more to do with that. The other thing, too, is that the Chinese, you know, what happened in Hong Kong was very similar to the color revolutions that have been kind of a program of the CIA to try to get their hegemonic ideas of the way people should be. And I often find, I mean, it's like Guaido trying to appoint himself president of Venezuela and going nowhere there. And it's, I've seen it so often in my life in Latin America and other places where this happens. And it's very, it never ends up good.
No, you're right. John, we're going to take a break and come back with promised phone calls with you next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie back with you, along with John Hogue, of course, his website, hogueprophecy.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. John, you ready for calls?
I am.
First-time caller, Marilyn in Springfield, Illinois. Hello, Marilyn. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Well, hi, George. I listened to you for 10 years. By the way, Mr. Hogue, I have an uncle, John, and it is spelled the same way, from Scotland. That was my mother's maiden name.
Ah, well, you know, people who spell H-O-G-U-E, which is the rare spelling, can probably date back to French Normandy, La Hogue, and the area around that little bay. That was means hill in Normandy, Frank, ancient roots, because it was Norwegian Vikings marrying and interracially with... French Franks.
You might be related to him, Marilyn. You never know.
Well, that's right. I hope so.
But go ahead with your question.
Well, I have read a lot of the predictions from the Nostradamus book, and I do believe it's relevant to our times. And I think Russia and China are in, as they say, cahoots. I think they did toss a forest, and they've always been jealous, and they've been trying to take over this country for years.
Your thoughts, Mr. Hoag?
Well, that's one way of looking at it. The other thing that also needs to be observed is whether, the United States has been, over the last 40 years, made a decision that it was going to be a service economy and started to sell off its jobs and factories to China. It wasn't like they came and grabbed them. They were pretty much sent there. So I think it could also be argued that the United States and its leadership in business, banking, and politics has for a long time been literally hollowing out the middle class and giving it away. And now that the lunch is being eaten by somebody else, we're blaming the people who took the opportunity to eat the lunch that we handed to them.
Is there anything good coming out of any of this plague stuff, John?
Well, I always feel with prophecy or anything that goes on with the world is the art of living is to take whatever comes your way and see if you can alchemize it. If you can take the base metal of a tragedy or a fear or something and turn it into the gold of insight. And so I think one of the things it teaches us, the 2020s are going to teach us, I've been saying this for so many years on the show, is that this is where you can't go back. If you think you can go back to the way it was before this COVID thing and many of the other things that are happening in the 2020s and 2030s, just don't look back. Look forward. Renew yourself. Renew. Don't kind of get caught with the anchor dragging the past and the good so-called good old days, which are more a mind projection than the reality. Anyway, the past is dead. You live in the present. Live in the present. The more you live in the present, and I'm finding this personally in my own experiences, the more blissful your life is, whatever's going on outside of it.
Absolutely. Next up, we've got John in Lorain, Ohio. Hi, John.
Yes, in response to the last caller, I think that I listened to something very interesting by John at the beginning of the program. He almost incidentally mentioned that the situation in Ukraine is actually being reversed by the media as he described it, and in which I'm convinced of being nothing but a pawn of the big business, military, industrial, CIA empire in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And one of its modus operandi is to always reverse the sequence of who perpetrated the first aggression, the first provocation, and project that aggression onto countries like Russia, China, North Korea, Iran, Cuba, Venezuela, any country that is not under the thumb of the United States. And I think you can see that by the fact that most people are ignorant of a huge historical fact, kept that way by the media, that the United States sent armies and massively invaded the Soviet Union back around 1917-18, deep into the 20s, and was tried to strangle that country back then. They've never done that to us, yet the reversal of that aggression has been pummeled into our minds for 100 years, that they're going to take over us. And the same goes for China. I think this, hate speech and fake news is a real currency in the of the media and discussions on the talk shows. But there is no hate speech and there is no fake news, no matter how big the fake big lies or propaganda or slander or smear jobs against Russia, China, Cuba, Venezuela, Iran, and all these countries around the world that have to be demonized to first justify $1 trillion going to the war profiteers of that military-industrial shield.
Well, though you may be right, John, in some respects, all those countries you just mentioned are horrible for human rights, and I wouldn't trust any of those leaders. Not one. Not one. John Hoag, go ahead.
Well, the it's an interesting point when Anthony Blinken, the Secretary of State, invited into Anchorage the Chinese foreign minister. And the first thing he did, the host did, is they thought the Chinese were coming to, let's see if we can sort out all the things that have separated us in the last presidential cycle, and that was kind of how it was illuminated to them. But when they got there, I watched this.
It was a different ball game.
Yeah, and Blinken started in his 6 minutes of time that he was allotted to go back and forth with the foreign minister. He started to nail them for human rights and, you know, this whole holier-than-thou thing. I tell you, outside of this country, I've lived extensively outside of this country. This country is blissfully ignorant of how it's holier-than-thou. We're exceptional. I mean, the other societies that got into that exceptional stuff, which means we can do whatever we can do to you, and it's not a crime, this is the first time I ever heard a Chinese foreign minister who is usually very reserved. But he ended up spending like 20 minutes listing chapter and verse all the things you could say are crimes against humanity that this country has been perpetrating, the 82 elections that it has meddled in directly, that Barack Obama actually went to the British and on British TV said, if you go into Brexit, Don't elect Brexit, or you'll be in the back line of our negotiations. Now, if that isn't somebody trying to manipulate brazenly another sovereign nation's decisions, and it's an ally. So there are so many things that you're not being told.
But I still wouldn't trust those countries he just mentioned.
Yeah, but if I'm an Iranian and I watch how in 1952 the CIA came to save British oil, British petroleum, overthrowing Iran's elected democratic prime minister and putting the Shah of Iran back.
They got rid of Mossadegh. Wasn't that his name?
It was Mossadegh, and he was taken out, and then the Shah was put back. The Shah was then helped by the CIA and some of their Gestapo helpers to create something worse than the Gestapo called the Savak, which terrorized people.
Well, they were horrible.
And here's the thing I was saying earlier about that. This is the thing that when we get into we force a revolution or a thing outside, it always ends up bad, because if you don't like the way Iran is now, it all started in 1952 when the first time America overthrew a democratically elected government after World War II.
Didn't Castro turn to us first before he turned to the Soviet Union?
Yes, he did. And guess who else did?
Ho Chi Minh.
Ho Chi Minh was another. And the third was Mao. It's rather surprising that after he, in 1949, won the revolution and what was left of nationalist China went to Taiwan, he actually said, look, let's relate and get capital and have negotiations for economic alliances with President Truman. And he was not at all open to that. And so the Chinese turned full 100% to Moscow.
Next up, we got Sherry in Long Beach, California. You're on with John Hogue, Sher.
Hi, how are you doing, George? I'm just privileged and very happy right now to talk to you.
Thank you.
And I love what you do for all of us. John, I want to say that I commend you for the undertaking of trying to decipher what Nostradamus was doing. And the pocket idea of the small pocket. The reason for that was what he was doing had to be done at night and in secret, because you could be killed for prophesizing or saying that you're a prophet.
Well, I just have to interject one thing that people need to know, that it certainly he was on a tightrope doing what he was doing, but he was actually one of the earliest best-selling authors of the printing press revolution. That's why almost all of his stuff, I mean, he was best-selling almanacs with prophecies about France and stuff from 1550 to 1555, and then he decided to do this
amazing,
this whole larger history, and it got him in trouble. And it was only because of the queen.
The queen liked him, right?
Liked him, yeah. She was Catherine de Medici, and he they connected really much, and she saved him from being burnt at the stake and tortured and all that. And towards the end of his life, she made a point during the great procession throughout the French realm after the first war of religion, over religion, which Nostradamus had predicted would happen. She honored Nostradamus by making his place one of the first places that she came to visit so she could publicly honor him in the 18 months of life that he had left. So the pocketbook was more a fashion thing and loading. It wasn't because it was a forbidden book. It was sanctioned by the French royal copyright.
Let's get Sherry's question in before the break. Go ahead, Sher.
Okay. Well, I kind of lost my train of thought there. my point being is that, you know, the word almanac, we have almanacs. Almanacs are easy for the average person to predict at a certain point because you have seasons and you have predictions that are easy. All I wanted to say is I'm an amateur Nostradamus enthusiast, and I had figured out in one of his quatrains that the 38th parallel will burn in the sky. Are you familiar with that one?
That's latitude 48. That one, and it's about the sun scorching from a fire in the sky, and it's at the latitude of 48 degrees of the climacteric, is what he said.
Okay, I respectfully disagree. It was the 38th parallel, and the sky will burn.
What was the index?
That was the Twin Towers. Okay, that was the Twin Towers. And then the only other comment I'd like to make,
that was latitude.
I read that book for years and only came up and only could decipher, because he had to write in riddles, too, again, because he could be in a lot of trouble.
That's right. That's true.
Okay. But the other thing I wanted to say was that the third Antichrist, from what I have gathered, is going to be a woman. And I don't know how, I don't have my notes. She will have been born in the year 1962 or thereabouts. So those are the two major things that I came up with. I know about Hitler. I know about the Hista River. And also, too, maybe predating Nostradamus would be Mother Shipton. Mother Shipton.
No, they were contemporaries.
Yeah, and Edgar Cayce as well. But Mother Shipton said, thoughts will fly in the twinkle of an eye.
Well, that may be. John, as we come up to the waning moments of the program, who was that other guy who made great predictions? Emanuel Stromberg?
Or Emanuel Swedenborg.
Swedenborg. He had some uncanny predictions, didn't he?
Well, he did. I've kind of find them to be more metaphorical, like St. John and Daniel. Actually, in my Roaring 2020s book, which I'm working on, I'm going to have a section on it looking how a lot of people are looking at this decade as being the decade of the book of Revelation is going to be fulfilled. But I'm going to argue an argument of the preterists, the people who actually see this as more symbolic language, and that, frankly, all the prophecies of Revelation were fulfilled in the first century A.D.
John, we only have about a minute and a half left. Tell folks where they can get this book when it comes out in May.
Well, it's around May 1st, I think, I hope, but soon, just in a few weeks. I'm in final edits. You just go to HogueProphecy.com, and you can pre-order it now for $4.55, and then I will send it to you at May 1st. And you just go to HogueProphecy.com. You'll see it's the first thing in the text after the titles, and you'll see this dark brown book with a couple plague doctors in tandem and Nostradamus's face. And it's a really cool-looking cover. Just link on there, and then I'll get you on the list and get it to you. The other thing is you look at the top of Hoag Prophecy, you'll see Hoag Readings, and you just click on Hoag Bulletin at HoagProphecy.com as the email. You just put Hoag Reading in your email, and I will get in touch with you, and we'll arrange the time. Then there's also a little green eyeball that you'll see, and that is so that you can join for $60 and not just be reading the tip of the iceberg of my articles, but the full iceberg as a Hoag Prophecy subscriber for only $60 a year.
That's John, $5 a month. We will talk to you again and hopefully see you the end of September in Everett, Washington, all right?
You will. Thus spake Nostradamus.
You got it. John Hoag, a great prophecy expert, one of the best, folks. Up next, Let's take a walk on the paranormal side. Get ready.